The following Women's Spaces show was recorded on Monday, July 22nd, 2019.
The woman in your life will do what she must do to comfort you and calm you down and let you rest now. The woman in your life, she can rest so easily. She does everything you do because the woman in your life is you.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Women's Spaces. My name is Elaine B. Holtz, and I'm your host. And at the board with me is my friend, my partner, my engineer, and co-producer, Kenneth E. Norton. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning.
Oh, my goodness, what a wonderful day it is today in so wonderful, wonderful Santa Rosa. And I'm really, really happy to be here. And this morning, I am so excited about this morning's guest. Joining me in the studio is activist Susan Lamont, who is involved primarily around issues of law enforcement and accountability. And along with Susan, joining me on the phone will be Marnie Roth, a longtime activist in Sonoma County, most recently in the effort to bring justice for Andy Lopez. She is also the mother of Branch Roth, who was killed by Rona Park public safety officers 2 years ago, which will be the topic of our conversation and the concerns that folks have around police accountability and the difficulty, and I emphasize that difficulty to encourage and implement change. You know, since Ken is going to L.A. to visit his mom and my son-in-law is having surgery, boy, I'll tell you, it's going to be a family week. We will not be on the air next week, but we will have a rerun, and we will be returning the first week in August. This will be the last Monday of the month show for us, so we're going to do the Women's Spaces Pledge just a little bit ahead of the game here. Well, today is July 22nd, and I have a little bit of trivia here for folks. July 19th to the July 20th, 1848, that was 171 years ago, the Seneca Falls Convention, the country's first women's rights convention, was held in Seneca Falls, New York, and that was the beginning, the kind of launching the women's rights movement. So just think about it. We've been struggling for 171 years. And look at where are we today? I mean, it's mind-boggling what's happening with these four young congresswomen, that they're being so viciously attacked by some of these racist statements. And, you know, I have to say something. I want to make a comment here. As far as I'm concerned, it's a breath of fresh air hearing some honesty coming out of some Congress people's mouths. And I think that as women, we need to stand up and support them. You know, there's a big movement around close the camps, and we had two protest here in Santa Rosa, which was very, very, very heartfelt. I mean, many, many people came out. But in my opinion, there should have been 10,000 plus mothers out there. And why do I say that? Because if it can happen to one mother's child, it can happen to another mother's child. And that's what we're going to talk about today. We're not only going to talk about the trial and the events that led up to the killing of Branch Roth, but we're also going to be able to hear the mother's perspective. You know, for myself, I was very involved in the Andy Lopez situation, and every time I met his mother, every time we would talk, I don't know why, what would come into my mind was, what did it feel like when that phone rang and she picked up the phone and her husband said, your son has just been killed? What was it like for a mother like Marnie Roth when she got that phone call to pick up the phone? And here she's been an activist working so hard to help other women's children and hear her own child. And I don't care how old a child is. A mother is a mother for life. I mean, I notice that. My daughter's 53 years old, and I still feel like her mother. I mean, it never changes. So these are things that we really have to be aware of. So, you know, that's what Women's Spaces is all about. Let's start thinking about things, and let's start recognizing that as women, we have more power and more say than we even give ourselves credit for. And that's why it's important to do the pledge. I mean, the pledge is all about raising your self-esteem, raising it to the point where you can stand up and say, enough is enough, or this isn't fair, or I want change, or I'm going to write a letter to the editor, or I'm going to organize something in my neighborhood. That takes self-esteem. That takes a willingness to stand up and not worry about what people are going to say or think. Just do the right thing and do something. Well, I had a very, very interesting time. I went, let's see, this was on July 20th. Today's the 22nd, so that was on, I believe, Saturday, July 20th. I went to an old-fashioned sewing bee. I mean, it was so much fun. Let me read this. I want to really cover the event. What we did was, as a group of us, the Western Sonoma County Historical Society presented an old-fashioned sewing bee at the Luther Burbank Cottage, where we will be producing the flag sewn by the suffragette. Each star and the flag represented a state as it ratified the 19th Amendment, giving the women the right to vote. This flag will be used in the 2020 Apple Blossom Parade in Sebastopol and hung in the West County Museum during the suffrage exhibit in 2020. I mean, it was amazing. I got to say, I only sewed one star. I was watching these women. They're all quilters, you know, and they're just sewing away. And there's Elaine. I couldn't even keep the thread and the needle. But I did get one star on there. So a special shout out to the folks that did that. And a thank you for bringing it together and also to sharing once again our history. You know, this beautiful flag was carried during some of the protests, and we're going to have that flag, a replica at least of that flag, sewn by local women in the parade, like they said, at the Apple Blossom Festival or parade in 2020. So, amazing. It's amazing. It was really, really, really fun. And you know, when I talked about the Close the Camp rally again, and as I was sewing the stars on the flag and I was watching all these women, I went back. I mean, just think, 171 years ago was when we had the first convention, you know, that we're going to have, you know, we're going to have a women's rights movement. I mean, when you think about it, what was happening prior to that? I mean, women were just second-class citizens. I mean, they didn't matter. They didn't count. And, you know, they're trying to put us back in our place again. You know, by saying things like, send them back home, that's saying, hey, you're not good enough. You're not right enough. You better shut up. We don't like what you're saying. So people have to pay attention to that, particularly women. I mean, do we want to lose all our rights? Do we? You know, I don't want to lose my rights. I love that I live in a free nation. And to be honest with you, I'm nervous. I'm very nervous about what's going on. And we need to pay attention. You know, the children are our future. And if we don't pay attention, what is in front of us? I mean, it's really kind of scary. Well, let's go and let's look at the pledge. You know, here it is. It's almost, for me, the last Monday of the month. And it's so interesting, you know, as I've said many times, I wrote the pledge for my grandson when he was about 6 years old, coming out of daycare, crying that his teacher told him he was a bad boy. And I thought to myself, I remember when I was told I was a bad girl. I remember when I was told on my report card, my kindergarten report card, if you can believe this, Elaine should understand that children should be seen and not heard. Well, obviously, I didn't listen, but it still impacted me most of my life. Whenever I would speak out, all of a sudden I would get this feeling inside of me that, oh, I shouldn't say anything. You know, what are people going to think? On and on and on. And that has changed over the years. And when I did the pledge for my grandson and I wrote it out for him, I remember I started doing it myself. I started thinking about it. What really holds me back? And when I recognized it was my lack of self-esteem, my lack of understanding that I was a powerful woman, that I had a voice, and that I did not have to be afraid. So when I do the pledge, that's where my heart is. I'm trying to say, look it, let's find a mantra that helps all women stand up. Like I said, I would have loved to see 10,000 women, mothers particularly, protesting about holding these children in the camp. I mean, it is just heartbreaking to me. And you know what? I just want to make one comment. You know, a lot of times I hear on the newscast, they say, oh, why are they calling it concentration camps, or why are they calling them Nazis and all that? Well, I did a little review. And what I did was, is I sat down last week and I decided to watch some of the old films on YouTube of what they called concentration camps, early concentration camps. And then also I started seeing how they were treating women and children, taking the women's children away from them, children screaming. I mean, when I was watching it, I said to myself, who are these people that are doing that? I mean, I can't even fathom who they are. I mean, it's the same thing when I think of this young man, Branch Roth, being shot. I wonder, how did that policeman feel, those two policemen, when they went home realizing that they had killed somebody, that they had taken another human life?
Five policemen,
excuse me, when they went home to their families, looked at their children, looked at their brothers and sisters and all that stuff. How did they feel? So there's a lot to think about here.
Can I make a clarification about the protests?
Oh, go ahead.
Just that they are ongoing and they are happening every Friday at 6 o'clock, either both in Courthouse Square and in Roseland by the Dollar Tree.
Oh, so it's going to be every week
at 6. Okay, on Fridays.
And I'll put that on my website www.womenspaces. That's very important to know. Thank you, my love. Okay, so let's do the pledge. Just take a deep breath. If you're driving in your car, please don't close your eyes. If you're home in your kitchen or in your living room, just relax in your chair and just absorb what the words are saying. Just take it in. The first thing we're going to do is I'm going to say it. So just repeat each line after me. And I have two people in the studio here. I'll ask them to join us. And just repeat after me. So let's start. The Women's Spaces Pledge. First line. My self-esteem
does not depend
on anything
outside of me.
My self-esteem
depends
on my relationship
with myself
and my higher power
and whatever. Now, and you, I used to say the great whatever, the great woohoo, Jesus Christ, Mohammed, I don't care, Buddha, whatever you want to put in there. But the idea is my self-esteem does not depend on anything outside of me. My self-esteem, it depends on my relationship with myself and the great whatever, the great higher power, whatever we want to call it. But the most important thing is to understand that, because self-esteem is an internal job. You know, we all hear those voices. Oh my goodness, can I do it? Am I going to be able to do it? Should I say something? Those are all the voices that hold us back. But when we do a little mantra like this, it helps overcome them so we can move forward. So I'm going to say it one more time. Just listen to it, absorb it. And by the way, if you want a copy of the pledge, all you have to do is go to www.womenspaces.com, and you can go ahead and just hit copy and then go to your Word and then print it out. Also, another thing around the pledge, you know, if you donate here to, if you become a member here at Sonoma, KBBF, all you have to do is go on kbbf.org and look on the donation side and just mention Women's Spaces. You can become a sustainer, you can become a member. There's all kinds of options for you. But once I find out about it, I'll make sure that you get a pledge card. So I want to really thank all the people out there that are supporting this station and all the people out there. I know there are many of you, and I thank you from the bottom of my heart supporting Women's Spaces. But you got to keep it up. We got to keep it up. Community radio is the key to so many things. I mean, lots of things. Well, I have two announcements to make, and then we're going to take a musical break. The first announcement I have to make is tonight at the Peace and Justice Center, where it's going to be, it's called Zero Waste Action, and it's presented by a good friend of mine, Portia Sinnott. She said, well, I would consider her an expert in this area. It's free with a donation, of course, and the whole idea behind the workshop is to learn how to live more sustainably through zero waste practices for home, school, and work, as well as when you are out and about at events. So if you want to get more information about it, you can call Occupy Sonoma County at 707-877-6650. And that, again, is going to be tonight, July 22nd, from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Peace and Justice Center. And they're at 467 Sebastopol Avenue in Santa Rosa. And I also have a website here that you can go and look up more information. It's called Occupy Sonoma County. That's OCCUPY, SonomaCounty.org. And you can get more information there. And it looks like, you know, we all have to play our part. I mean, it takes the government, but it also takes citizens. citizens' action and citizens' awareness and citizens' willingness to make the changes in their lives, as well as to support and to protest to make sure. I mean, I can't believe we're having such a hard time outlawing this pesticide that we know is damaging children's brains. I mean, it's just mind-boggling to me. Anyway, the second announcement I have, and this I'm really excited about. I generally don't go to the Democratic, even though I am a registered Democrat, I don't necessarily go to the Democratic Club's party, monthly dinner. But this month is very, very interesting because they're going to be having a program called A Voice of Her Own, Women's Suffrage. It was written and directed and narrated by Bill Tesak, and it's going to be performed by some of my dear friends, Shirley Bennett, Nancy Holabin, Millie Olson, Bill Montgomery, and our own city council member, Chris Rogers. And it's going to be a PowerPoint presentation is going to be given by Janet Reynolds. So that's going to be on Wednesday, which is July 24th, 2019. The dinner meeting, it's too late for the dinner, but the program starts at 7:30, and that is free. And it's going to be at the Sonoma County Fairgrounds at 1351 Maple Avenue in Santa Rosa, and it starts at 7:30. And once again, it's going to be a special presentation of the Reader's Theater in honor of the 100th anniversary of the passage of the 19th Amendment by Congress. 100 years ago, and we're still fighting. I mean, it just doesn't make sense to me. And you know, folks, if there's somebody out there that it can make sense of all this that's going on, email me at elaine@womenspaces.com. And let's have a discussion about it, because it's mind-boggling to me. Well, we're going to take a musical break. And you know, I want to remind folks once again, when I play a song, I play the whole thing. Why do I play the whole thing? Because each song has a message. Each song is trying to tell you something. So I want you to listen to this song, the lyrics, very carefully. It's called Blood of the Ancients, and it's sung by Betsy Rose and the Women's Chorus. And I think if you just listen to the words, because we're talking about 171 years ago that we had the first women rights conference, you know, and here we are in 2019, and we're still debating whether we have the right to choose over our own bodies. And children are being taken away from their parents, from their mothers, women. And here we are. 100 years ago since we got the vote. And what was the idea behind getting the vote? That maybe we could stop wars, that if women had more power, that maybe we could have peace, or there was a chance to have peace. And you know something? Thank God for those four young women that are speaking out. I mean, my heart goes out to them. Anyway, here we go with the musical Blake, The Blood of the Ancients, sung by Betsy Rose and the Women's Choir. When we return, I will be talking with Susan Lamont, who is primarily involved around issues of law enforcement accountability. And along with Susan, joining me on the phone will be Marnie Roth, a longtime activist in Sonoma County, who most recently worked on the bringing justice to Andy Lopez. She is the mother of Branch Roth, who was killed by Rona Park Public Safety Officer 2 years ago, which will be the topic of our conversation, and the concerns that folks have around police accountability and the difficulty, again, the difficulty it is to encourage and implement change. So let's go ahead and listen to our song.
Our veins, and the forms pass.
Oh, that song. The ancients. So sometimes I feel that they're watching over us and helping us in this transition that we're going through, whatever it is. Well, for you just joining us, you are listening to KBBF 89.1 FM Calistoga. And I want to remind my listeners, the opinions expressed here are not necessarily the opinions of KBBF, its board of directors, its members, or Women's Spaces. Well, welcome back. You're listening to Women's Spaces, and I'm your host, Elaine B. Holtz. And without further ado, I want to introduce my guest. Joining me on the phone is Marnie Roth. Are you there, Marnie?
I am.
Welcome. You're going to have to speak a little bit louder. Welcome to Women's Spaces. And joining me in the studio is Susan Lamont. Both women are longtime activists and will be talking about police accountability and the circumstances that led to the death of the killing by Rona Park Police of Marnie Roth's oldest son, Branch Roth. Well, welcome, Marnie. Welcome to Women's Spaces and welcome, Susan. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Before we begin, I want my listeners to know that this is a very, and I put two verys in there, personal interview for me. The fact that Susan, Marnie, and myself were heavily involved in the 2013 shooting. We didn't shoot them. We were involved in trying to bring justice and accountability to Sonoma County of young 13-year-old Andy Lopez and the effort all of us made to encourage accountability and then personally to have Marnie's son, Branch, killed by Rona Park Police. And then prior to this, I cannot believe it that my dear friend, I'm not going to give her last name, Val, was her son Jesse was murdered. And I mean, I remember sitting in my kitchen crying with her when it happened. And I said, my God, if you live long enough, everything happens in your life. And so, and then all of a sudden, here comes number three, which was Marnie's son. And so this is a very, very personal interview for me. And I think it's very important that we listen. And also, as most of us know, that in many of these cases, there are settlements that are made. And oftentimes you hear people say, oh, they just did it for the money. Well, sometimes the only way that you can actually bring any attention to a case like this is by suing. And what else can you do? And how do we resolve things? We don't resolve things by making changes. We resolve things by giving people money, as if money is the only thing that matters, when really what they're seeking is justice and fairness, particularly if it's a child, for your son or for your daughter. So welcome, ladies. You know, before we begin, is it okay if I tell a little bit about you? Is that okay with you, Marnie?
Absolutely.
Well, let's start with you. Marnie Roth is a longtime activist in Sonoma County, most recently in the effort to bring justice for young Andy Lopez. She is also the mother of Branch Roth, who was killed by Rona Park police safety officers 2 years ago. In June, she and her husband, Chris, won their lawsuit against the city of Rona Park and were rewarded $4 million. And we're going to talk a little bit about what it was like for Marnie to be in the courtroom and what it felt like. I mean, it's just heartbreaking to me, actually. And Susan Lamont is a writer, a photographer, and a landscape designer, is also an activist, primarily around issues of law enforcement, accountability, income inequality, and peace. She was active at the Peace and Justice Center of Sonoma County for 15 years, both as a board member and as a center coordinator. And actually, she's the only person that I've ever really known personally that actually got her name on the ballot for the Green Party. What was it that you?
There are other people you know who were there.
No, but what's
for the county council, the group that runs, you know, the local Green Party.
But it was really interesting, even though you know other people, I didn't know I've never known anybody as well as I know you, and there was your
right.
Name, and there I was. I couldn't vote for you because I wasn't a Green at the time, but it's just amazing, so congratulations. Well, welcome both of you, and let's start with you, Susan, if that's okay. Give us a bit of background, and you can join in any time that you feel that you'd like to say something also, Marnie. Give us a bit of background on how you got involved with the issue of police accountability and what that means to you.
Well, I was working at the Peace and Justice Center at the time that Andy Lopez was killed. And besides just a visceral reaction to law enforcement killing a 13-year-old child, this incident was involved with so many things that the Peace and Justice Center was involved with. It was law enforcement overreach. It was issues of immigration. It was issues of poverty. It was issues of lack of education. There were so children playing with guns. You know, you and I have been involved in that one. So there were so many things that came together in this one killing that I just had to be involved and be able to talk about all of them.
Well, it was interesting for me, the shock of it, that a young boy could be shot that way, and then hardly, you know, it's almost like he was the bad guy rather than it was awful.
We had people, members of the Peace and Justice Center, walk into the office and say, well, if he just hadn't, you know, Peace and Justice Center members were blaming him. So yeah, it was pretty horrifying.
It's interesting, you know, that yeah. happened. Yeah. Marnie, do you want to comment? How did you start getting active? And I know you and Chris were in front of the sheriff's office for how many months, you know, trying to get signatures, trying to get people to become more aware. What was that thing that spurred you to start becoming an activist?
Well, we were involved in the anti-nuclear movement, you know, many, many years ago. So we sort of, I think, cut our teeth in a lot of ways. I mean, all of us, for sure, at our age, I would say the Vietnam War. But we also became very active in the anti-nuclear movement. But going back a couple of years, I think, you know, police brutality, the rise of the militarization of the police in our country is what has really brought our attention to the changes that we really seriously need to make, because it's becoming a them versus us. And so when little Andy Lopez was killed, as we were just saying, being a mom just, you know, stunned us and brought us to our knees. And we thought, this is just completely out of the realm. This is ridiculous. And Eric Gelhaus just gunned down this child. So we had to get involved, and as many people did. And that's really, for Sonoma County, that's what happened the last couple of years for us. And that became our focus. And yes, we did stand out in front of the courthouse every Tuesday for a couple of years there, trying to educate people around police brutality, information. We would go from the front of the courthouse to sometimes over in front of the sheriff's department. We would go back and forth different weeks, and we met many people, and we were able to help people understand what was happening. And many people came to us to tell us about their experiences too. So it went both ways.
Well, I really want to acknowledge both you and Susan, actually the three of us, for the work that we did. I mean, it's still a work in progress.
You know,
there's still resistance, but at least it came to the table. You know, and there was a lot of discussion, a lot of pullback, a lot of move forward, a lot of one step forward, one step backwards. It was just amazing. Well, let's get into the conversation. And, you know, I want to say it on the air again. My condolences go out to you for the loss of your son. I mean, I can't imagine. I remember when my friend Val lost her son, Jesse. I mean, I just sat sitting there. I kept looking at my grandson thinking, oh my God, how could I react? How could I even live with having something like this happen? So I'm going to have Susan talk a little bit. Let's talk a little bit about the background of what happened with Branch Roth. I mean, who was he? I mean, I want to read something, because oftentimes we forget the person who was killed. We forget that's a human being that has rights, that has feelings, and that all of a sudden it's all focused on the police, whether they should have done it, they shouldn't have done it, they should have done it this way. So let's just talk a little bit about your son. Is that okay with you, Marnie?
Yes, that's why we're here.
Branch Christopher Roth passed away suddenly on May 12, 2017. He was 41 years old. Branch was born December 16, 1975 in San Francisco and raised in Forestville, California. He graduated from Molina High School in 1994 and worked in construction since graduation. He's survived by his parents, his sisters. He has several sisters and brothers. And, you know, the one thing that, you know, that's really gets to me when you talk about Branch was, and people have to recognize this, Branch was a beloved son, a father, a brother, an uncle, and a friend who loved life and making people laugh. You know, he was a human being, and we really have to remind ourselves of that. So give us a little background. What were you going to say?
I was just going to say, I never met Branch, so I'm not the person to speak about him. You know, Marnie is. I can talk about
what happened
in the motel room, because
right, exactly.
I watched the video so many times.
Exactly. Yeah. That's just give a little bit of background about that. And then we'll talk about discuss the role of the sheriff's officer, the coroner. But give us
background. I just want to say one thing. I do thank Susan Lamont tremendously, because she, in a way, she did get to know Branch. And the harshest, you know, part of it was watching him die. And, you know, for us, we knew Branch his whole life and his siblings, and they did humanize him greatly in the courtroom. It was really beautiful to hear his siblings speak of him. But Susan had to sit there. She did there, you know, you're a warrior. So she was able to be a witness and to take this back to the community and be able to speak more so about police brutality, because she was able to do that. So thank you, Susan.
Thank you.
Well, also, and I want to throw in that I did know Branch. I met him, I think, two or three times, a few things, and I found him to be very warm.
Uh-huh.
Very warm.
That's what everyone says.
Yeah,
yes.
Very, very warm. Very hello. You know, I mean, you didn't feel uncomfortable when you were with them, and that to me is a certain skill. So go ahead, talk a little bit about the background of what happened and what your involvement was.
Okay, I went to the court every day, just like as Marnie and Chris did. It was 12 days, and during the course of it, they showed first the entire incident from the time that the first policeman came into the room until actually after Branch had died, and how they were reacting to it. And then throughout the trial, they showed different parts of it. And so I did watch Branch die over and over again, and I'm still traumatized by it. So what happened is he was using meth and was in a motel room in Rohnert Park and didn't want to leave because he felt that his pants had been poisoned by the chemicals in the detergent that were used on them. So he didn't want to put them on, and so he wouldn't leave. And you know, they called the police to do a welfare check on him. And so the policeman was trying to convince Branch to put the pants on. And Branch was only semi-coherent. You know, he could carry on a conversation, but slowly. And he kept explaining that he couldn't put on his pants, and all he needed is he needed to talk to someone. He just wanted, he said over and over again, I want to talk to someone.
Like a mental health person.
He didn't say, but someone to help. And he didn't think the police were it, clearly. He was not combative anyway. No, there was nothing violent at all about him.
And all this
in his
is
manner.
On the film.
Yes, it is. And the cop keeps saying, you know, put on the pants. And he says, I can't do it. He'd start and he'd do it, and then he'd, no, can't do it. They told him to turn it inside out. Well, he's smart enough to know that if you've got poison fabric, both sides are poisonous. He didn't, you know, he wasn't going to do that. And he finally offered to take a sheet and wrap it around him. If they were going to take him down to the squad car, you know, he could be wrapped in a sheet. And they wouldn't let him do it. And who knows why? I have no idea why they wouldn't let him do it. But eventually they lost patience after about 10 minutes. It had been pretty calm up until that point. But at one point, Branch did say, don't kill me. And
he said, please don't kill me.
Yeah, please don't kill me, yes. And when they tried to force him to get in the pants and be handcuffed, he tried to run away. He was scared. And he, in the course of the video, he calls for help, I think it's more than 30 times. And
It's like, it's like Eric Garner. Yeah. I can't breathe.
Yeah.
I can't breathe.
You can tell that he's just terrified. He isn't really fighting back against them. He's trying to get away. And he tries to cut out the window, and more cops come, and they end up with five of them, but they also have EMTs. They've got a couple of guards at the motel. And they tased him six times. They hit him with flashlights several times. They broke at least one rib. They elbowed him. They kneed him. They punched him. They got him down on the ground on his chest and got the handcuffs on him and were getting him with his legs all twisted up. And, you know, he's moving, but very, very little because he can't move. But he's moving because he can't breathe, and he's trying to breathe. And they, he says, finally, "I can't breathe." And one of the cops says, "You can breathe." And right at that point, everything changes because Branch is much more quiet. Before that, he's yelling, and it's, "Help me, help me, help me." And he calls out for his parents. And but then he stops the yelling. So something clearly had changed. And after 2 minutes, they realized he had died. At one point, one of the cops says, check him. And he meant check him to see how he's doing, but the cop who was checking him checked him for weapons. What? The guy had been naked. They already knew there were no weapons. That was absurd. You want to say something, Marnie? No, okay.
It was such a pile-on, Elaine, that the officers admitted on the stand there was really nobody in charge, so it became this free-for-all on Branch. And he did beg for his life, but it's really pivotal here. A really important point to make is that when Branch offered to put a sheet around himself, that's where it could have ended. Rona Park now is facing a $4 million payout, and all this could have ended that moment, and an officer just putting their arm on him and saying, "Good enough, Branch. You got the sheet on. Let's go." And it would have been over.
Instead,
it just escalated into this complete debacle, and he died, and he suffered and died.
I think from what I've been looking at and what I've been studying about some of these actions with the police, that's why training is so important, is mm-hmm. that once the escalation starts, it's almost like a crowd mob.
Yeah.
You know, it just can't stop. You know, it goes on, and suddenly they get a mindset. Instead of thinking, here somebody's in trouble, maybe they had some drugs that weren't working, or they're hallucinating, instead of seeing it that way, all of a sudden they're seeing someone running away from them, and there's the bad guy. And it that's why training is so very important. What was that like for you as a mother watching that, Marnie?
Well, I do want to say that during the trial, that's why I thank Susan, each time the video played, which was quite often, Isaac would turn to us and he would...
Isaac's the lawyer.
And he would, Isaac Schwager, it was our lawyer, and John Scott, and he would turn to us and give us a signal, and we would get up and be able to leave, that we were allowed to leave when the video went on, and as well as people in the audience, many of them got up and left. They did not want this, you know, imprinted, you know, in their head, so they left too. The jury had to sit through it all the time, and so we were able to see. So what I do know and what I've gleaned is through everyone else. I've gleaned through the eyes of my lawyer for 2 years what happened to Branch. I know specifics. I know exactly what happened to him. So so in my mind's eye, I know what happened. But I did not watch the video from,
It
was just too painful.
One thing, even though it's painful and horrible to watch, thank goodness we have them, because in the past it would be hearsay.
Right.
My word against yours. This way you could see blatantly exactly what happened. We did not have that with Andy Lopez.
Right.
So, you know, that in its own blessing. So, Susan, what you know, all this happened. I mean, it sounds like you were traumatized through the video. I mean, of course, as a mother, I'm just listening to it and I'm feeling, it's like you don't even want to hear it, to be honest with you. You say, did this really happen? Not in our country, not to my friend, not to her son. So tell me, what stood out besides the video? What stood out in the trial for you? What was some of the kernels?
Basically, how our legal system and our law enforcement systems are set up to focus very narrow points, mm-hmm. and how it's set up so that law enforcement always has to be right. Because we've entrusted them with lethal weapons, the ability to kill people for minor things. You know, we're not talking about capital offenses here. And that, therefore, the resistance has to be so strong. There can be no culpability at all. So every policeman said they would, and some of them said it very blithely, like, they said, of course I'd do it again. Every single one of them said it. And
no reflection.
We often hear about how traumatized policemen are when they kill someone. I mean, they tell us that, it's not just the family who's traumatized. Oh, the policeman's really traumatized too. These guys did not act it. They were really callous. And
they were very
defensive.
They have to be because they have to be right. And so any kind of admission that anything might have been wrong and therefore that anything might need to be changed can't occur because they got to be right.
Well, they have to hold on. I mean, it's like admitting you killed somebody. I mean, I think, you know, one of the commandments if people are going to churches is thou shalt not kill. And then here you are killing somebody. So in so many levels, there has to be a justification for it. And that's the sad part of it. I mean, a mistake was made here. And when you make a mistake, the most important thing is to look it over and try to make changes. And when the way they act, it's like, it's the victim's fault, not their fault.
Right.
So it's very interesting.
And this was about training. So the it all rested on the fact, had they been trained?
So
they hadn't.
Tell us what you think is, why do you think this case was so important and the verdict? I know they're going to appeal it. Of course,
right.
That's what they do. But what do you think is the most important thing about this case?
Well, one thing that was very important is, as Isaac Schweiger, the lawyer, points out, is that almost no cases ever go to trial. And therefore, you end up with settlements, and there's no admission of guilt.
Right. It happened with Andy Lopez. They
settled. Almost everything. And this one went to trial, and a jury said, Rohnert Park, you didn't train your policeman properly. And essentially, you used a medical expert to say that this positional asphyxiation, which is when he was on his stomach, and he has a large belly, and it pushes up into his lungs, and his face was into the carpet, and you've got weight on your back, and you can't breathe. And they had an expert who said that such a thing can't happen, and they actually had that as part of their training. That in most places actually admit that this thing exists, this positional asphyxiation. But Rohnert Park, which we know had been told you need to have a review board to review your law enforcement, they've been told that for 20 years and they've refused to do it. We're not changing our policies because we're perfect, we're fine. And now they've been told no.
Well, you know, it's really interesting. It's really interesting when there's resistance to changing policy. I mean, I don't understand that.
Well, admits you were wrong.
If Right, admit you were wrong. Well, the $4 million settlement, that says they were wrong, so they don't even have to admit it. You know, their jury by their peers said, you're wrong, you need to change, and that should be sufficient.
So Marnie had something she wanted to say.
I just want to add that that's right, the jury, not only did they say you were wrong, but there is a legal term. I mean, this came up a lot in the trial, that they were deliberately indifferent. The very first thing they voted on was that, and they named all the officers, which I would, before the show is over, like to name all these officers' names, but they were deliberately indifferent to the rights of Christopher and Marnie Roth is what they were, voting on. And that's an important term. Rona Park was deliberately indifferent pertaining to training. And of course, they're not admitting any wrongdoing. And one other thing I want to point out is that there were five officers in this incident, not one or two or three or four, but five officers. And every officer, not one of them had the wherewithal to say stop. That's astounding. Not one person could step back and take some leadership and say, wait a minute, let's reassess here what we're doing and stop the others. So that's what really, gets, Rona Park in a lot of trouble too.
And it's important
to justify.
We're gonna hold a thought right there, because we're going to take a musical break right now. We're going to just take a little break. And the song that I picked was a song called Imagine, sung by Etta James. And the reason I picked it by Etta James is I just love her. She's great. And the reason I chose this song is because we have to start imagining a better world. We have to really start thinking. And when you hear stories like the story that we're hearing today, you really see the importance of people really getting together and working together and trying to find solutions. Because if we don't find solutions, it's not going to get any better. It's going to get worse, as we're seeing it each and every day. I mean, more and more people are being killed by police. All kinds of different things are happening. So let's sit back and listen to this song, Imagine, by Etta James. And when we come back, we'll continue our conversation with activist Susan Lamont and activist Marnie Roth.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us. Above us, only sky. Imagine all the people living for today. Imagine there's no countries. It isn't hard to do. Nothing to kill or die for. No religion too. Imagine all the people living life in peace. Oh yeah. You may say I'm dreaming, the only one. I hope someday you join us, and the world will live as one. Imagine no possessions. I wonder if you can. No need for greed.
imagine all the people sharing all the world. Oh, oh, oh. You may say I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one.
I know that there are many of us out there that are thinking the same way. Hey, I have a little announcement to make. I made a little mistake. The voice of her own, the women's suffrage reading, is going to be happening at the Santa Rosa Democratic Club, and it's going to be at the Veterans Memorial Building at 1351 Maple Avenue in Santa Rosa, right across the street from the Sonoma County Fairgrounds. So that's going to be at the Veterans Memorial Building, 1351 Maple Avenue in Santa Rosa, and it will be starting, I'd arrive there at 7 o'clock. It says here 7 p.m. is dinner, 7:30 is the program. I don't know if you can get dinner now. Now, but right now at 7:30 is when the program starts and it's free. Well, welcome back. You're listening to Women's Spaces, and my name is Elaine B. Holt, and I'm your host. And I'm in the studio with me today is activist Susan Lamont, and we're talking about police accountability and the circumstances that led to the death of the killing by Rohnert Park Police Star. Police Department of Young Branch Roth, and I also have Marnie Roth, who is also an activist, but also the mother of Branch. You know, Marnie, now that we're coming back on the air again, there's two things I would like you to address. First of all, I know there's an interesting story how you ended up with Isaac as your, how do you pronounce his last name, Susan?
Schweiger.
Schweiger as your lawyer. And also, how, as a mother, how are you keeping your sanity? And, you know, we're really coming rapidly to the end of the segment. You want to respond to that?
Okay. Just want to quickly say thank you for playing that song. That was a song we played for Branch's memorial, and also Branch once told his sister, if I ever had a song for my memorial, I'd like it to be Imagine. She thought, interesting that you would pick a song, you know, for your memorial.
Well, but, you know, there's nothing anyway, metaphysically, who knows?
I don't know. Catch me up here.
How do you keep your sanity, and why? How did you pick Isaac as the lawyer? We only have 4 minutes left.
Okay, Isaac. We were at a trial where Isaac was defending another activist, actually, back during the Andy Lopez situation, and his name was Ramon Cairo. Thank you, Ramon.
Right.
And we met him then, and we thought, this is an outstanding lawyer. We need to know him. And we also did have another son who had a couple of things that he needed to deal with, and he was also had a horrible confrontation with police at the jail, and I said, you have to meet Isaac, and he did, and it was that case that broke pretty wide open, and it was a brutality case. But Isaac is an exceptional lawyer. He is just, you know, really one of a kind. And quickly, I just want to say there really isn't anybody in Northern California all the way up to the border right now. But Isaac, he gets so many calls. I don't know how he stays on top of it all. He says it's very difficult. There's a lot of this going on. And I don't have sanity, to tell you the truth. And some days I do. We're pretty broken, but we are. I do feel the trial is one door closed, and there's some justice. It's really small, but we have some justice. So it's really just trying to figure it out how to get through and around it all. And I don't think you ever get over it. You just have to live with it. That's my answer.
Well, Marnie, I want to thank you so much for being on Women's Spaces and for being so open and so honest. I know how hard this is for you. It's hard for all of us. It's hard for me to listen, and it's not my child. So I can just only one-tenth imagine what it must feel like for you. And I don't know why I picked that song. I had it for last week, and what happened is we couldn't get it on the air, and I said, no, then we're going to play it this week.
Can I make one comment? Going back to the trial, what I think we see is how fundamental to the culture violence is. And when we sat and watched the policemen, and there was a EMT, and there was the director of public safety, the former one, and then there's the current one, some of us were reacting that we were seeing men who had probably been abused in their lives.
I'm sure.
And that they were then enacting it on other people.
Okay, we're at the end of the segment. I can't believe it. I'm going to have to have you back again, because I want to know what changes we can make locally.
Yeah.
There's all kinds of nice
yes.
things. So I want to thank you very much. Any last words, Marnie?
I do. I want to quickly say that police policies must change. And right now, the way they exist is that they are sanctioned. It's sanctioned brutality, and that's the way policy is. And it's paying compliance is sanctioned police brutality. That's what has to change. There's no doubt about it. That's where my focus needs to be right now.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you so much, Marnie Roth, and thank you so much for Susan Lamond for being such great guests.
Thank you for
our show. Like I said, special thank you to activist Susan Lamond and to Marnie Roth, who is also a longtime activist. And again, my condolences for the loss of your son, Branch Roth. And, you know, all these young people that are being shot and these horrible things, let's not make their deaths in vain. This is Elaine B. Holtz. You've been listening to Women's Spaces. Thank you so much for listening, and I look forward to being with you the next time.
Previous Women's Spaces show was recorded on Monday, July 22nd, 2019.